Hello, and welcome to the history of Haiti.
In the last episode, the two political parties, liberals and nationals, had their dispute come to a head with a violent war in the south. This war was won by Solomon, the National Party, and the Haitian government. But this war would not nearly be the end of political violence, and in this episode, Lysias Solomon will be overthrown. So I talked a lot last episode about the BNH, or National Bank of Haiti. As I mentioned, this was basically the handing over of the Haitian government's finances to a French bank. This policy was extremely unpopular, especially after a large embezzlement scandal, which involved both Haitians and foreigners, broke out. The scandal resulted in Solomon attempting to imprison some foreigners, but their governments coming to their defense. Once again, gunboat diplomacy was used, this time to protect foreigners. As shown by the BNH, Solomon was extremely pro-foreigner with his foreign policy. He had the idea of both playing foreign powers off each other, as well as using foreign powers to help Haiti. As the 19th century began to close, European powers began a new wave of colonialism and imperialism. This involved what we now know as the Scramble for Africa. In 1885, the new German Empire held the Berlin Conference, probably one of the most evil meetings in history. This meeting partitioned Africa among the European powers. Like, seriously, they drew lines on a map. But European imperialism did not stop at Africa, and it would spread to the Caribbean, Haiti, and the rest of the world. In Haiti, as in many other countries, colonial powers like France, Britain, Germany, Spain, and the big one which we'll get to in a second, the United States, were after a few different things. They wanted raw resources and Haitian exports. They also wanted money and control of the finance and trade. And finally, they just wanted to expand their sphere of influence. Around the same time, a German Navy squadron actually went on a tour of the Caribbean and visited Port-au-Prince, leading to a meeting between Solomon and a German prince. The Haitians had a mixed view of foreigners. While broadly, the indemnity, foreign merchants, and the insulting National Bank were hated among the Haitian people, among the ruling class, many believed that Haiti needed foreign backing to move forward. Some saw France as the country's natural brethren, while others advocated a plan similar to Christophe's idea of abandoning the French relationship to embrace Britain. Solomon was amiable to ideas of allowing further foreign control. During the war with Bazelays, he offered the United States either Mole Saint-Nicolas or the island of Tortuga to serve as a naval base, but they turned him down. He also, and this would have been insane if it had worked, offered to make Haiti a French protectorate, which was similarly shot down by France. While the United States turned down an offer of Mole Saint-Nicolas made by President Solomon, they would soon become the ones asking for it. To jump ahead a little bit, in 1889, a new Secretary of State named James Blaine took office in the United States under President Benjamin Harrison. His foreign policy was quite a bit different than his predecessors. He believed in an ideology of Pan-Americanism. This was a new interpretation of the Monroe Doctrine. This ideology aspired to the idea that the nations of the Western Hemisphere should come together with cooperation and trade that would be led politically and economically by the United States. In 1889, the International American Congress met in Washington, D.C. In an address to this Congress, Blaine said, quote, "Friendship and not force, the spirit of law and not the violence of the mob, should be the recognized rule of administration between American nations and in American nations." Unquote. In this, he basically declared that the United States would attempt to become the leader of the Western Hemisphere. Blaine saw potential for huge profits from Latin American trade, trade which would be taken away from Europe. This was the Monroe Doctrine, becoming far more active, where the U.S. sought not just to protect Latin American countries, but to also expand their own influence. This growing U.S. imperialism was met with a mixed reaction from the Haitians. Many feared the growing United States and what it could do to Haiti. Arguments for alignment with Britain or France were often rooted in fear of the United States. But one man, a man who will be the subject of the next episode, thought otherwise. His name was Antoine Firmin. Firmin saw a lot of potential with the United States. He believed that Haiti needed to figure out how to thrive under the shadow of the United States without being totally absorbed by it. He saw the industrialization and mass workforce of the United States and believed that allying himself with the U.S. would help Haiti industrialize and grow. But he was also weary of America. He feared that if Haiti did not fix its own problems, it would be absorbed by the United States. And while he wanted American help, he wanted Haitian independence more. Firmin looked with a positive eye towards the United States as a country. He saw not just the economic success, but also the political stability inside the United States. He thought that the U.S.'s system of government and variation of the political party in power achieved stability. With regards to Haiti, Firmin believed that the United States was by far the lesser of two evils, as he had seen far more gunboat diplomacy from Britain and Germany than the U.S. He also incorrectly thought that the United States was a model of racial equality post-Civil War. Here, he was falling prey to the fallacy of the grass is greener on the other side. He also believed that the United States would stick to its founding principles, and that it would act morally with regards to Haiti. This is one of the things which makes Firmin such a tragic figure, as we will see with future episodes. While Solomon's foreign policy was unpopular, what was even more unpopular was his domestic policy. As his reign dragged on, Solomon began to act more and more arbitrarily, like a dictator. He said, and I'm paraphrasing him here, that he liked coups, which he needed to rule. He said to take advantage of a crisis to justify maintaining absolute power. Solomon used arbitrary arrests and exiles to quell political opposition. He targeted members of the elite, which he knew harbored political ambitions or who were opposed to him. One of these was a man named François-Denis Legitime, who Solomon forced into exile. Legitime was a career soldier who had become a strong member of Solomon's government. He was the Secretary of State of the Interior and Agriculture. In 1887, Solomon had the Constitution amended to allow him to be re-elected, which he then was for another 7 years. He soon launched a new wave of arbitrary imprisonments and arrests. These included arrests of a congressman and other people in high positions of power. This was all extremely unpopular with the people and among the government. Smelling blood in the water, our old friend Bertrand Sinel returned to Haiti with intention to overthrow the government. One region in particular, which had hatred not just for Solomon, but for Haitian governments in general, was the North. Over the last few decades, the North had become more and more agriculturally productive. They had not had the pillaging bands of Piquets destroying property. They had not been at the epicenter of the Saint-Nazaire War or the Liberal versus National War. This prosperity, however, meant that the government just had more to take in the form of taxes. However, this growth did not mean that the North got more attention from the Haitian government. Since the end of the Pétion and Christophe War, the Haitian government had been concentrated in the South. Obviously, Port-au-Prince was the capital, but the southern peninsula was far more politically active than the north. In addition to the taxes imposed on the north, there was also the fact that the government's revenue was all going to pay French bankers, which was heavily resented among the people. This all led to a mindset among the northerners that their money was going to a government that both gave them nothing and one which sent their money to France. In addition, the ideas of northern independence created by Christophe had never really died. All this meant that the north was ripe for revolt. Brizeran Senau saw this, and so he began plotting. Across the country, with loads of bribes, he was able to accumulate a network of people who would be willing to revolt. This group included members of all political parties, not just Senau's liberals. The most important member of this group was a general in Le Cap named Telemaque. In August of 1888, Telemaque revolted with his army in Le Cap. He began a march south towards the capital. A vanguard army was sent to attack Gonaives, but it was routed. Solomon, in response, mustered his own army and marched north. Seeing an opportunity, the capital revolted, with both the army and civilians rising. That same day, Solomon resigned and left the country to go into exile. He returned to Paris, where he had spent most of his longer exile, but his health was failing. He died 2 months after arriving. And thanks for all he had done for them, the French government gave military honors to his funeral. Instantly, a rift opened up among the rebels. You see, Brizeran Senau's alliance with Telemaque had been one of convenience. Brizeran Senau himself did not like Telemaque, and he was now facing the prospect of Telemaque becoming president. So Brizeran Senau acted, and he arrived in Port-au-Prince as soon as he could, and he chose a successor for Solomon. Remember the minister I mentioned a minute ago, François-Denis Legitime? Well, Brizeran saw him as an ally that he could place in power. Legitime returned quickly from his exile in Jamaica. Brizeran Senau made himself president of the provisional government and made sure that he had control of the armed forces of the capital. By contrast, Telemaque took his time coming down to the capital. But when he did, he arrived with the Army of the North. Everything was set for a showdown between Senau and Telemaque, and Senau chose to strike first. On September 28th, Senau launched a surprise attack. With support from more ships and the fort that overlooked Port-au-Prince, Senau's force crushed the Northern Army. Telemaque himself was hit and died in the fighting. A few weeks later, the National Assembly met and elected Legitime president. As you can probably guess, the idea that the current president had just assassinated one of their own went horribly in the north. And it went particularly badly with a man named Hippolyte, who would overthrow Legitime. Florville Hippolyte was born in Le Cap in 1827, just 7 years after the fall of Christophe and the Northern Kingdom of Haiti. He was a career soldier, which gave him a great sense of order and discipline. He was colored, but in practical terms, he acted like a black northerner. He entered politics around the time that Seleuc took power, and he fought as a soldier throughout the time. When Telemaque revolted against Solomon, Hippolyte gained national recognition as one of Telemaque's best sub-commanders. He was offered a position inside the government of Legitime, but turned it down. After the coup, he sailed north to Le Cap with some allies, and there he launched a revolt. And it would be this revolt that would overthrow Legitime. But the credit for the success of this revolt would not go to Hippolyte. Instead, it goes to a Haitian intellectual, Antoine Firmin. Next episode, I want to do something a little bit different. Antoine Firmin is one of the greatest intellectuals in Haitian history, And so I want to begin next episode with a break from the political history to talk about him and his work, as well as the other Haitian intellectuals of the period.